Hi, and welcome to Recap Revision. This episode is going to be about forces. Scalar quantities include examples like speed, mass, distance, and energy. These quantities only have magnitude. However, vector quantities have both magnitude and direction. Examples include force, acceleration, and velocity. Velocity and speed are often used to mean the same thing, but speed is scalar and velocity is a vector. Velocity has both magnitude and direction. Vectors can be represented with an arrow, the direction of the arrow showing the direction of the vector, and the length showing the magnitude. Contact forces examples include friction, air resistance, tension in a rope, and the normal reaction contact force when one object rests against another. Contact forces act when one body touches another. Non-contact forces are opposites. These occur when bodies are physically separated. Gravitational, electrostatic, and magnetic forces are examples of these. Weight is the force that acts on an object due to gravity. The force of gravity around the Earth is due to the gravitational field around it. The weight depends on the strength of the gravitational field strength, and different planets will have different strengths. We can calculate the weight of an object using this equation: weight equals mass times gravitational field strength. And gravitational field strength is measured in newtons per kilogram. When two or more forces act on an object, those forces may be replaced by a single force that has the same effect as all the original forces acting together. This is a resultant force. When two forces act in the same direction, they'll add up to make a larger force. However, when two forces act in a different direction, a smaller resultant force is produced. In a free body diagram, all the forces are shown acting on a body. Take the example of a man pulling on a rope. He will have weight acting downwards, a reaction force acting up, the tension of the rope to his right, and the friction to his left. You may be able to calculate the resultant force from this kind of diagram. A single force can be resolved into two components acting at right angles to each other. This is called resolving forces. When you do resolve a vector, you must extend vertical and horizontal lines from the ends of the vector until they meet. You may be asked to use the parallelogram of forces. This involves completing this parallelogram by marking parallel lines and drawing a diagonal from point to point to measure the resolving force. Work is done when a force causes an object to move in the direction of the applied force. We can calculate work done by doing force times distance. 1 joule of work is done when a force of 1 newton causes displacement of 1 meter. Therefore, we can say that 1 joule equals 1 newton meter. Energy is transferred from one store to another when work is done on an object. An example being when you lift a weight, energy is transferred from the chemical store in your arm to the gravitational potential energy store of the weight, and also to the thermal store in your arm. However, remember, when you hold a weight without moving it, you get tired, you are transferring energy from your chemical store to a thermal store. No work is done here, you only do work when you move the weight. At least 2 forces would have to be applied to bend, stretch, or change the shape of an object. If you only apply 1 force, for example, to a spring, you set it in motion, but you do not stretch it. The extension of a spring is directly proportional to the force applied, provided that the limit of proportionality is not exceeded. Therefore, we can work out that force equals spring constant times extension, where spring constant is newtons per meter. E could also be the compression of the object, if the relationship also applies to the compression of an elastic object. When a spring is stretched elastically, it returns to its original length and shape. This is elastic deformation. However, if the spring is stretched inelastically beyond the limit of proportionality, it means the spring does not return to its original length and shape. This is inelastic deformation. A force that stretches a spring does work. An elastic potential energy is stored in the spring. Provided the spring is not deformed beyond the limit of proportionality, the work done in stretching the spring is equal to the elastic potential energy stored in it. When a spring is released, the stored elastic potential energy can be transferred to other energy stores, like kinetic store. To work out elastic potential energy, you do a half times spring constant times the extension squared. You will need to know about required practical 6, investigating the relationship between force and extension. You will need a spring and be able to hang a weight off it each time. Use a ruler to measure the extension after the weight has been hung on it. Then, gradually increase the weight in regular intervals and measure the extension again. Record your results and plot it in a graph. You should see a directly proportional relationship up to a certain point, reaching the limit of proportionality. The moment of a force can be described as the turning effect of a force. This can be calculated through the equation moment equals force times perpendicular distance. Perpendicular means at right angles. The unit of a moment is newton meters, not newtons per meter, like the spring constant. When two forces act along different lines, those forces can rotate the object. When two forces on an object act along the same line, they can squash or stretch it. If an object is balanced, the total clockwise moment about a pivot equals the total anti-clockwise moment about the pivot. This idea is useful when answering questions. A lever can be force multiplying or distance multiplying. The example of lifting a rock shows how a lever can be force multiplying. If a person applies a small force from a big distance from the pivot, the lever will multiply this force because over a small distance there is a bigger force to lift the heavy rock. Many machines use gears, which can be used to increase or decrease the rotational effects of a force. Two gears may exert equal and opposite forces on each other, but the radii may be different, affecting the overall moment. Fluid is a gas or a liquid. The pressure in a fluid causes a force normal at right angles to any surface or direction. Pressure can be calculated by force divided by area. For example, in a swimming pool, the pressure gets larger as you dive down to the bottom of it because there is a greater weight of water on top of you. Pressure exerted by a liquid also depends on the density of the liquid. The denser the liquid, the greater its weight. Pressure due to a column of liquid can be calculated using the equation pressure equals height of the column times density of the liquid times gravitational field strength. A partially or totally submerged object experiences a greater force on the bottom surface than on the top surface. Upthrust is the resultant of the two forces of the cylinder. An object will float when the upthrust from the fluid is equal to the object's weight. If the weight of the object is greater than the upthrust, the object sinks. An object will sink when its density is greater than that of the fluid, and will float when its density is equal or less than the density of the fluid. The Earth's atmosphere is confined to a thin layer above the Earth's surface. Air molecules exert a pressure by colliding with the surface. However, at higher altitudes, there are fewer molecules in a given volume, so the atmospheric pressure decreases with an increase in height. Distance is a scalar quantity. It shows how far an object moves and does not involve direction. Displacement, however, is a vector quantity. It includes both the distance an object moves, measured in a straight line from the start point to the finish point, and the direction of that straight line. If an object is moving at a constant speed, the distance travelled in a specific time can be calculated using the equation distance travelled equals speed times time. Speed is a scalar quantity, it does not involve direction. Velocity is a vector quantity, it involves the speed and a given direction. The speed at which a person can walk, run or cycle depends on their age, fitness, how far they've already travelled and the nature of the ground being travelled over. Typical values may be taken as walking at 1.5 meters per second, running at 3 meters per second, and cycling at 6 meters per second. Motion in a circle is a good example of showing how constant speed and constantly changing velocity can exist at the same time. For example, take a satellite in a circular orbit around the Earth. The satellite moves at a constant speed, but its velocity changes all the time. The velocity changes because the direction of travel changes. The pull of the Earth's gravity changes the satellite's direction of travel. When an object moves along a straight line, we can represent how far it has travelled by a distance time graph. The speed can be calculated using the gradient of the graph. When an object accelerates, the gradient of the distance time graph changes. We can calculate the gradient by drawing a tangent to the curve on the graph. Then, the equation speed equals distance over time can be used from this point. The average acceleration of an object is calculated using the equation acceleration equals change in velocity over time taken. An object is decelerating when it slows down. On a velocity time graph, we can read that a constantly increasing line or a straight line going upwards shows constant acceleration, a straight line shows a constant velocity, and a straight line going down shows constant deceleration. You can calculate the acceleration from a velocity time graph, as the gradient on a velocity time graph equals the acceleration. You can also work out the distance travelled from a velocity time graph by calculating the area underneath it. The equation of motion for uniform acceleration is final velocity squared minus initial velocity squared equals 2 times acceleration times distance. When an object falls freely under gravity near the Earth's surface, it has an acceleration of 9.8 meters per second squared. However, when an object falls through a fluid, something that flows, either a gas or a liquid, resistive forces will act on it. The initial acceleration due to gravity is 9.8 meters per second squared, but as the object increases speed, larger resistive force act on it, so the resultant force decreases, and so does the acceleration. Eventually, the resultant force is zero, and the object moves at a constant velocity. This is called the terminal velocity, when its weight is balanced by resistive forces. However, this does not mean that you are slowing down or the speed is getting less when you are decelerating. It means you are getting faster less quickly. Newton's first law states that if the resultant force acting on an object is zero and the object is stationary, the object will remain stationary. If the resultant force acting on an object is zero and the object is moving, the object will continue to move with the same speed in a straight line. This first law tells us that the velocity of an object only changes if a resultant force acts on an object. When a resultant force acts, a moving body can speed up, slow down, or change direction. The example of a car travelling at a constant speed along a road shows the resistive forces of the car balance the driving force. Inertia comes from the Latin word meaning inactivity or inaction. We use the word to describe an object's tendency to remain at rest or to continue moving at a constant speed. Inertial mass can be defined as a ratio of force over acceleration, so we can use the equation inertial mass equals force over acceleration. Newton's second law is that the acceleration of an object is proportional to the resultant force acting on the object and is inversely proportional to the mass of the object. This can be expressed mathematically. The second law can also be written as an equation. Resultant force equals mass times acceleration. You should know the approximate sizes of speeds, accelerations and forces involved in everyday transport. If a car has a mass of around 1,500 kilograms and an acceleration from rest of 2 meters per second squared, the resultant force acting to accelerate from rest would be 3,000 newtons and would have roughly a maximum speed of 30 meters per second. If a train had a mass of around 200,000 kilograms and an acceleration from rest of 0.2 meters per second squared, it would have a resultant force acting to accelerate from rest of 40,000 newtons and roughly a maximum speed of 55 meters per second. You will need to know about required practical 7, the effect of mass and force on acceleration. Here you will need to set up a trolley with card attached and a pulley fed through a loop with an accelerating force hung off the end, preferably a weight off a table. Then a light gate will need to be set up so the trolley can run through it, and attached to a timer. This shows the apparatus you might use to investigate how acceleration of an object depends on the object's mass and the force applied to accelerate it. The trolley is allowed to accelerate from rest. Its final speed is calculated through the length of card divided by the time taken to pass through the light gate. The trolley's acceleration is calculated through the final speed divided by the time taken to reach the light gate. When you change the force, the mass of the trolley is kept constant. The force is varied and accelerations are calculated for different forces to show that acceleration is proportional to force. Doubling the force for a fixed mass doubles the acceleration. When you change the mass, the force accelerating the trolley is kept constant. The mass is varied and acceleration is calculated for different masses to show that acceleration is inversely proportional to mass. Doubling the mass for a fixed force halves the acceleration. Newton's third law states that whenever two objects interact, the forces they exert on each other are equal and opposite. If you were to push a person with a force of 100 newtons, they would push you back with a force of 100 newtons. These are the features of Newton's third law pairs. They act on separate bodies. They are always of the same type, for example, two gravitational forces or two contact forces. They are of the same magnitude, they act along the same line, and they act in opposite directions. Stopping distance is the total distance travelled from when the driver first sees a hazard to the point where the car stops. It is made up of two parts, thinking distance and braking distance. Thinking distance is the distance travelled while the driver reacts. Braking distance is the distance travelled while the car brakes. Reaction times often vary typically between 0.2 to 0.9 seconds. However, these times can be slower if the driver has been drinking alcohol, taking certain types of drugs, under fatigue, or are distracted by using their mobile phone. There are other factors affecting braking distance. They include speed, a large speed increases the braking distance, force, a large braking force reduces the braking distance, mass, making the car more massive by carrying a large load increases the braking distance, weather, in wet or icy conditions there is less friction between the road and tyres, braking distance increases, vehicle maintenance, worn brakes or worn tyres increase the braking distance, and road condition. Some road surfaces affect the friction in the tyres. A smooth or muddy road can increase the braking distance. The work done by the brakes reduces a vehicle's kinetic energy, causing the vehicle to stop. The kinetic energy is transferred to the thermal store in the brakes. Work done equals kinetic energy transferred, or force times distance equals half times mass times velocity squared. This shows that the braking distance is proportional to velocity squared, and the mass of the car. If the speed doubles, the braking distance increases four times. Momentum can be calculated using mass times velocity. Since velocity is a vector quantity, so is momentum. Force is essentially the rate of change of momentum. The equation linking this is force equals change of momentum divided by time. It tells us that when momentum changes occur in a short time, large forces act. Safety features can increase the time in which moving objects come to a stop. Some examples include crumple zones in cars that increase the time in which a car stops in a crash, seat belts in cars that make sure the passengers use all of the stopping time in a crash, without a seat belt you keep moving until you stop very quickly, and shin pads worn by hockey or football players to stop a ball, stick or foot in a longer time. In a closed system, the total momentum before an event is equal to the total momentum after the event. The word closed means there's no external forces act on the system. If a moving car collides with a stationary car and they stick together, they share the momentum. Both cars move together, but at a lower speed than the moving car had before the collision. Momentum is a vector quantity, so should be represented in a vector diagram with the direction of the motion. Thank you for listening to this recap revision podcast on forces.